Welcome back to another great episode. Today is 9/11, but we aren't going to discuss 9/11. It's not related to our series, but this is the structure of what we are going to do moving forward. We're going to release our catch-up episodes every single day until we don't have a catch-up episode. On top of that, you may have couple episodes here and there that come out due to the fact that we were supposed to release a couple episodes already, but without further ado, we are going to finish off our Coast to Coast killer, a long haul killer series, and we are going to talk about the Vampire Chucker, and on top of that, we are going to finish our Postmortem File series with Serenity Deal. Then, you know, down the week we have some trailers, and on top of that we have our start for Without a Trace. We also have our a couple more trailers, I guess, as well, along with another episode of Without a Trace. So this is going to be our catch-up week. I do plan on recording most of the day today. So you have episodes coming out and we can rebuild this podcast as it is. But without further ado, let's go jump into our Long Haul Killers episode. Today, we are going to be talking about Timothy J. Fafides. I'm pretty sure I did not pronounce that name right. But in short, this is a case of the Vampire Chucker. I figured that this would be an interesting ending for the series whenever I was picking out episodes for the series. And yes, by the way, we did get to new technology. We got a new computer at least. I'm thinking about converting this podcast to the computer instead of doing it through my phone, but haven't decided entirely yet. So, it was just after 5 p.m. on November 26, 2013, when Timothy J. Fafides rolled up to the Red River Way Station outside of Moorhead, Minnesota. You know, if you don't know what Minnesota's really like, haven't been there, want to go there, it's pretty typical for a Midwest state. But it's pretty unique. They have a twin stadium. They have a lot of cornfields. They have Mall of America. They have that type of stuff. There's also, once again, farmland surrounding the Red River Valley, which is quite peaceful. There's part fields of beets, soy, and corn, which not just is in Minnesota, but it also reaches into North Dakota. So, approximately 1,300 rigs pass through the station just off of 194 per day, according to the Minnesota Department of Transportation. That's a huge number, and just to throw this out here again, it is not uncommon for, you know, truckers to go into the field just being a trucker. You know, in this case, 1,300 is a very small portion when we talk about serial killers. By the time he had arrived, the pair of commercial vehicle inspectors on duty had already checked the paperwork for hundreds of drivers, many of whom were blurry-eyed and, you know, tired from doing all their miles on the road. But Timothy wasn't. He couldn't stop talking. Even one of the inspectors, her name is Cynthia Harms, would recall in court that he just wasn't like everybody else. He was just too perky. But, you know, she also couldn't help but notice that Timothy had fangs or something like that in his mouth. Once again, vampires don't exist, but, you know, you can always insert things through, you know, the dentist and whatnot. He gave the specters an uneasy feeling, and so did his passenger. His passenger didn't really feel comfortable, and we're going to explain that really closely. And she was a teenage girl who refused to make eye contact, and she appeared to have bruises on her face. When the specters ran a computer check on him, they found that the passenger had filed a protective order against Timothy in 1999, and this pretty much barred him from making contact with the girl who he was currently with at the time. So the Minnesota State Patrol was called, and it just kind of spirals down for him right here. But the fangs gave him pretty much the name of the vampire trucker. It wasn't just the fangs though, it was also, you know, his crimes that he did inside of his own truck. He enslaved and tortured multiple women, and yeah. So let's continue on with the case though. Timothy was booked at the Clay County Jail. The girl identified in court filings as victim A told detectives the incidents and the events that happened in the past 6 months with Timothy. Timothy promised her an easy and lucrative summer job, but instead he repeatedly raped and tortured her in the sleeper berth of his truck, which he called the Twilight Express. He had also forced her to wear a set of fake vampire teeth, and then later he used a Dremel power tool to file some of her teeth down to points. Well, let's talk about how painful that is, definitely when you're not a dentist. That's extremely painful, definitely for somebody her age, or any, I guess, anyone's age that doesn't like pain, doesn't like, you know, the drilling. That sounds extremely painful, to grind down your teeth with a tool. That's not properly how it's supposed to be done. So in 2013, he was arrested. He had made national headlines. At this time, it also had brought forth another victim as victim B. This victim met Timothy at a truck stop in Salt Lake City in 2012. She told Timothy, or no, she said that Timothy told her, my bad, that he would take her to dinner, but instead of doing that, he held her hostage on his Twilight Express. She faced months of physical and sexual violence, including being stripped naked and beaten with a belt. In March 2014, he was charged with multiple felony kidnapping and sex trafficking charges relating to victim A and victim B. By November of 2014, the court filings show that prosecutors had met with four other victims, one of whom reported being sexually assaulted by Timothy as early as 1994, though not in his truck. Two of his new victims had stories almost identical to those of victims A and victim B, from being duped into traveling with them, to the beatings and the rapes, to even once again having their teeth filed down into fangs. The question that we gotta realize and kind of wonder is not necessarily how can a man do such gruesome things to people. We have to ask, how can a man or anybody, not just a man but a woman even, go under the radar with law enforcement? Even with, you know, the protective order, even all these other factors, how can he not be under law enforcement's radar for almost even a decade before all of this broke out. In 2004, the FBI had started noticing a troubling pattern. Dead bodies were turning up with relative frequency along the stretch of I-40 that connects Arkansas, Texas, and Oklahoma. The bodies belong mostly to transient women, once again after prostitutes, with a few commonalities, other than, you know, them being prostitutes and being late in ditches along the highway. They started investigating, and they shared notes, and they talked back and forth and all that other stuff with local investigators on other cold case murders, and by 2009, they had identified 500 murder victims along the nation's highway. It wasn't just strictly there, but most of them were there. The collaboration was in part thanks to additional reboot of the Violent Criminal Apprehension Program, or VCAP, a cross-jurisdictional database of information on violent crimes. VCAP had existed since the 1980s as an unwieldy paper catalog of case notes from across the nation, but in 2009, it was brought online to help trade valuable information about serial crimes, homicides, sexual assaults, and cases of missing people and unidentified remains that allowed cops to connect dots between cases across multiple jurisdictions. The rest of this article pretty much talks about, you know, that. It also goes into other trucker killers like Wayne Adam Ford, by the way. If you have not heard that episode, I'm pretty sure we did that episode. You can go check that episode out, which is part of this season. Another one was Keith Hunter Jesperson. And it's just really sad deal when we talk about a lot of these cases. But yeah, it looks like the rest of the article stops talking about Timothy. Just continues talking about VCAP and the FBI. But let's kind of, I want to go touch base with, you know, this type of scenario. You got to remember, most people that you probably work with, not necessarily a truck driver, but if you're a truck driver, you know, most of the truckers that you don't interact, or that you interact with, I should say, aren't serial killers. I don't think most of them go into a job and use their job to go on a murder spree across the United States. I really don't think so. So when we talk about, you know, numbers like 1,300 truck drivers going through a weigh station, out of the 13, maybe one or maybe two even are bad people. They're ideally serial killers. They're the people that smuggle drugs. So ideally, you know, we just got to remember, most of a truck driver's work field and workforce isn't made up of bad people. Yet, when we talk about truckers that have, we have to always question what makes this truck driver or that truck driver, you know, fall under a radar that should be so big. And I think it is a lot bigger now, obviously not from this case or a particular case. It's just how the government likes to regulate and control truck drivers and how they work. But it's more of, you know, background checks or making sure that this person is doing what they're supposed to. If a truck driver, and let's just say Timothy, if Timothy, like any other truck driver that killed people and used the job as an advantage, you know, how can they fall directly under the radar? And we talked about a couple ways that happens. You know, I'm not a law enforcement officer, but let's say if I was, I can't just randomly stop every truck driver to make sure that they're not murdering people, that they're not going out with the warrant or not smuggling drugs, or they are driving without a CDL. But, you know, it's not necessarily that law enforcement can step up the game, the FBI can step up the game, because they really can't without probable cause. But we understand that truck drivers, not every truck driver, like I said, a very, very, very small portion of truck drivers use their job because they can travel. They understand that they can go to a truck stop, get out, you know, take in a prostitute, take in somebody, you know, into their truck, rape them, murder them, leave them along the highway, and then go to the next location. I personally believe that is why truck drivers get better, not better, but a better coverage. A reason why they don't necessarily fall within the radar of law enforcement, fall within the radar of DOT, fall in the radar of other things. By the way, if you want to learn more about Vampire Trucker, you can also check out a book by John R. Cole. I'm not entirely saying that's the right book for it, but it is what it is. I'm going to try to find some more information about this guy really fast. This is just a really short case, so that's also why I am also making sure that we had everything covered. But before we continue with it, let me tell you, if you haven't followed our Facebook page, I kind of have been posting updates, you know, here and there on it. But follow us on Facebook. It is After Dark Coast to Coast Killers. And now I have not been able to change the name yet. Still working on that. And by the way, according to this article from People, he has gone to trial and he may have had faced a maximum, or would have faced a maximum of 25 years. Let's see. But a lot of these women were sex slaves, you know. And once again, we talked about how they filed down their teeth and promised them something bigger, but then they were repeatedly abused, they were raped. So that's typically the idea of this guy. Let's go to a local article from Utah, which is where he is actually from. Like I said, he just used his job for legal sexual activity. So let's kind of go into the trial. Obviously, Timothy pleaded guilty in court to a sex slavery case where he had admitted to transporting women across state lines for months while sexually assaulting them, then changed his plea weeks before a jury trial was set to begin. At the time, he was 56. He had pleaded guilty in a U.S. District Federal Court to 2 counts out of 6 in indictment from 2014. Two of the counts were for transportation for illegal sexual activity. The plea agreement accepted by the judge on Thursday at the time carries it with a possible sentence of 20 years in prison. He also had pleaded guilty in May of whenever this happened to count five of transportation of child pornography. He, according to the article, he would have been sentenced in November. I don't know if he actually was. According to U.S. District Court Judge David Newfer, he told Timothy that if you plead guilty, you relieve the government the burden of proving your guilt at trial. And that was when he was advising him of his rights. He did not speak during the plea other than to say that he understood his rights and he decided to proceed with his charge or his change of plea. He did not have one question for the judge. In response, the judge asked if he wanted to consult with his attorneys before asking him a question. After speaking with his attorneys, the man responded by apologizing to the judge. It doesn't necessarily talk about the other victims besides the victim A and victim B, but there is supposedly two more victims according to the investigation. Originally, he did not plead guilty to the charges and a 3-week jury trial was scheduled, but was canceled because he wanted to plead guilty. Let's see, he could have actually been free if he decided not to plead guilty, I guess. One of his victims was in Salt Lake City in May of 2013 to start working for his over-the-road trucking business. I guess this was his business or something that he's working for. Soon after the victim arrived, she told Timothy she wanted to go back to her home in Florida, but then he threatened and assaulted the 19-year-old woman, and he regularly beat her, controlled her with fear, and didn't allow her to make eye contact with anyone. News of her arrest prompted another woman from Utah to also report her story to authorities. She said that she had met him in April of 2012 while she was filling up her car with gas. The two had started a conversation and he invited her to dinner. Once we got into the truck, she said, I thought we were going out to eat. We had just got on the freeway and I said, why are we going this way? There are no restaurants this way. For the next 3 months, he had held her against her will, raped her, beat her, cut her hair, forced her to change his color. It also says, according to her testimony, he beat me with the belt as if I was a little 2-year-old, getting spanked to the point where I should have passed out and died. She also said that her teeth were also grounded down like the other victims with an electric filing tool. It wasn't until Timothy drove his truck through a weigh station in Nebraska that she was rescued after Department of Transportation officials had noticed bruises on her arms and they took her from Timothy. She said that she also can't believe that she survived the 3-month sex slavery, quote unquote, I shouldn't be here, I should be dead and gone. There's a higher power, there is a reason why I am here. In addition to victim A and victim B, federal prosecutors introduced new evidence of 4 other women who they say were abused and assaulted by Timothy in very similar ways between 1994 and 2013. They weren't prosecuted for those cases, meaning that their cases really couldn't move forward because they were too old for new charges, which is kind of weird because didn't victim A and victim B kind of they kind of were actually abused throughout that time. Not necessarily victim B, but I think victim A was. But yeah, that's the Vampire Trucker for you. I hope you liked this episode. This episode may have seemed a little bit rushed, but we couldn't really find much information about this guy even before recording the episode, but I thought this was just an interesting ending to this guy. And by the way, if I might put it in this one, I might not, but if you want to know more about sex trafficking and how to stop it, I'll probably post it on my Facebook account for this podcast, so stay tuned for that. But see you guys next time on the last episode of the Postmortem.